Unfiltered opinion.
Sometimes you have ideas and you're not quite sure why.
Does he secure the bag?
Sometimes you meet people and realize there's probably a reason why you stayed in touch.
Just listen.
Sometimes all the pieces just come together by themselves.
Woo! I'm Jimmy Moyaha.
I'm Nicolette Mashile.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Welcome to another Insider Exchange, the show that aims to bring you the unfiltered opinions of most of our guests and obviously Simon and myself. This week we're taking a look at a couple of things in our market matters. We're doing a roundup of what's been happening in the month of August, some big movements that have taken place, the Nikkei in Tokyo almost crashing and completely forgetting about that. That did happen this month, yes, amongst other things that have taken place. And then in our Investor Insights, we're going to be taking a look at the tax implications of the two-pot system. We spoke about the two-pot system last week, and we shared our thoughts around whether you should be withdrawing from the savings pot of that. This week, we're going to be taking a look at the tax implications if you do elect to withdraw, and of course, updating our wall. We kick off with our Market Matters. Market Matters this week is brought to you by our friends at Finalto. We thank them for continuing to support the work that we do, and we're joined in studio by Finalto CEO Danny Moas, friend of the show. Danny, lovely to have you back.
Thank you.
Let's get straight into it. Markets this month were just weird.
Very weird. Very weird. The first one, I think the weirdest one would be the Nikkei, I think. It was beginning of this month, the 6th of August. The Nikkei dropped more than 12%. I think it was the biggest drop for the past 37 years.
Yes.
Quite impressive. And then the next day, back up at
the biggest rebound in 18 years or something like that. It made no sense.
Yeah, it's if you look into it and you start reading, some interesting piece on it, you would see that it's mainly actually due to what happened in the US. Over the past couple of years, I would say Asian traders had this carry trade strategy happening, yeah, where pretty much they were borrowing free money. I mean, if I remember correctly, one of the key interest rate of the BOJ was actually negative. It was actually negative. It was 0% or minus?
Minus 0.1%. Japan was the last remaining country in the world to have negative interest rates. Even Switzerland didn't have negative interest
rates. They're also the first. First and last.
Yeah.
First and last. And effectively what that meant, as you say, Danny, is it gave investors the opportunity to borrow money from Japan, yeah, and the bank would pay you to borrow that money.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could deploy that capital cheaper elsewhere, and that's the carry trade.
And
benefit.
Which seems that they were doing it in the US mainly. So they were borrowing money in Japan, investing the money into the money market in the US, getting about 4-5%. And with that, making almost like free money once again. And with that, investing further into the US market, such as Nvidia and other hot stocks like Meta or Google and so on and so forth. And on top of that, you could see that some of these, Japanese firms and traders and other firms were using this proceed to also invest into the Nikkei.
Hmm.
Now, I think it was all of the noise started mid-July, end of July, when the US government started saying, maybe we're going to start, cutting interest rate and so on and so forth. So, pretty much I would tend to believe that most of the traders and investment firms started panicking and looking to unwind this carry trade strategy. And therefore, it created some sort of short-term panic on the Nikkei.
But I think also the unwind, the anticipation from a trader perspective was we're going to have time to unwind. But the Bank of Japan then suddenly increased interest rates at the same time.
Exactly.
So you saw that, you're like, okay, no, we're going to see interest rates come down in the US. This is going to be a gradual process. But you didn't expect Japan to make that decision at the same time.
At the same time.
And ordinarily, a carry trade kind of situation is not a bad thing. It's not one of those things where investors rush to get out of it. But when your earning rate suddenly comes down and you're now suddenly having to pay higher on your borrowing rate, and it's in the billions or the hundreds of billions of dollars, you liquidate immediately. You don't waste time trying to say, how do we figure it out?
And getting through that door, it's a small door. Mm. I mean, yeah, particularly, the Nikkei is not the most liquid market compared to the US markets, etc. And what we saw, and it's the classic thing, what was sold off? Everything. Bitcoin, because it's a case of what do you want to sell? It's what can you sell?
When you need cash in a hurry,
it's what can you sell? Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. That's why we said Bitcoin interesting in the Sunday evening. Why? Because it trades over weekends. Mm-hmm. So it was that size of the door just not big enough for that wave that wanted to move through it.
And investors were definitely sitting there saying, and traders as well were sitting there saying, I don't want to have to carry the risk of now suddenly having to pay for the money that I've borrowed, having to pay more on that, but also receiving less and just sitting in this conundrum because I'm tied into assets. Yeah. And that massive liquidation affected global markets. I think it was the first time that's ever happened, that kind of carry trade conundrum has worked out in a negative sense for markets. I can't remember a time before this where we saw this.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, it was also a great opportunity to buy the dip, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's why the next day you will see Nikkei like back up 10%.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it. Look, I mean, Nikkei, month to date, flat.
Yeah.
Nasdaq, month to date, flat. Mm-hmm. S&P, a little bit green. It's like, if you just look at a monthly chart, like a line chart without the candle, you're like, August, boring. Mm. Nothing happened.
But August was very, very interesting. And you say flat, and I think about the... some of the numbers that we saw, I think at some point I saw that there was around $2 trillion in market cap wiped out off of New York or US markets because of some volatility. Mm. And coincidentally, I mean, this might have been a pure coincidence. It worked out to the exact same 2 trillion rand that was the stimulus package announced by the US during COVID. But that's just a coincidence, right? That's just a coincidence. No. Nothing more there. How are we feeling about the performance of markets? I mean, we've touched on Asian markets and obviously US markets, but SA markets have been doing well. We
relatively
take the
speaking.
Win. Yeah, relatively. Yeah. South Africa has always been the underperformer. I mean, South Africa has always been lagging behind the developed economies, obviously, because we're an emerging market.
That's what I wanted to say.
But from an emerging market perspective, and if you're looking at the Rand, we are having a rocker of a month.
No, I think investors, and especially foreign investors, are becoming more and more comfortable about South Africa. Mm. In terms of emerging markets, personally, I tend to believe that South Africa is the leading country among them all. The Rand overperformed all of the others. It has been a good year for South Africa. And I think it has to do a lot with what happened on the political scene. Because things are a little bit more stable, at least from my point of view, foreign investments are coming back.
And we're up almost 10% year to date.
Yeah,
on the top 40. Mm. Yeah. But interestingly, foreigners are coming in, but they're buying bonds. We're not yet seeing the buying in our market seems to be the local fund managers. And I've spoken, who did I spoke to? Oberholzer, and I can't forget his first name, from Stanlib. And he's like, you know what? He came back to South Africa 10 years ago, been working in this space since, first time he's really bullish on the South African market. And I'm hearing that from more and more fund managers. We've seen offshore weightings in the big funds, the Reg 28, so it can go 45% offshore. We've seen those numbers edging down as sort of local fund managers start saying, hey, look at what's in our market here. Yeah. And it's a relatively broad-based rally, which has sort of started in banks and retailers, but has been kind of broadening itself and moving into small cap index, all-time highs.
You say the local market is doing well, and to Danny's point around being bullish South Africa, I think, and I've said this before on many platforms, it's because South Africa, in terms of the market space and in terms of the companies that are in South Africa, we've actually got diamond companies, not in terms of performance and numbers and everything, but in terms of conditions. If you think about every other market around the world, South Africa is one of the most unique markets that is that is comfortable dealing with high pressure. We've dealt with high inflation. We've dealt with high interest rates. We've dealt with that as an emerging market for the longest time. And when international markets like Europe and the US started seeing rumblings of inflation. I mean, the US was panicked when inflation hit 9%. We know 9%. 9% is normal for South Africa. We're okay with those kinds of numbers. So the point I'm making here is the South African companies, the management teams within South African companies are conditioned to run under those stressful situations. So when you say to that company, hey, you're going to suddenly get a big windfall or a big reprieve in interest rates coming down, that's why people are bullish. Like, South Africa's like, you're actually going to do well.
Yeah.
And I mean, also, I think that most of the other markets, I mean, the global markets, generally speaking, are very much intertwined, right? South Africa, again, like, because South Africa is more an emerging market than anything else, we are not really linked to what's going on, you know, in Europe or in America or even in Asia. I mean, yes, of course, to some extent, but way less than, you know, the US market or...
South African companies, a lot of South African companies trade internationally, but where they trade internationally, that's where they benefit from a weaker rand, right? So you'd think having a weaker rand is a bad thing, but their profits are earned in foreign currencies, brought back into South Africa, brought into consistent currency basis. And if you look at our gold counters, for example, you're now suddenly, you're no longer earning $2,000 an ounce on gold. You're earning $2,500 an ounce on gold. That $500 at a 17 rand multiple is insane for your balance sheet. So the benefit of our companies being able to survive outside of South Africa and then bring that profit into South Africa, but also in being able to deal with a local situation, the local election, the local volatility and everything that comes with that has been really good for us. But also, most importantly, and I just want to get this in before you come in, Danny, we've had electricity.
Loads of it.
Now, which definitely helped on the productivity side of things and on the running costs of all of these businesses. Definitely, I mean, you have been seeing costs, you know, going down. And that was directly linked to the, I think, to the consumption of diesel, pretty much for all of these generators. But no, the last thing I wanted to add is, like, even on the retail market, when you look at the online trading industry, and like especially the retail market, you could see, I mean, I've been seeing like a spike of trading activity from your average retail trader. And that shows also that, you know, one, you know, people have more money to spend and invest on the market. And two, they're also bullish, once again, about the South African market and the rand and the South African companies, which is a good thing. I mean, it's pretty much like all of the signs are in the green, you know, and hopefully that's going to last for the next few years. Yeah.
So Simon called the rand at 16 rand 82. We're at 17.60. So another 16.80. Yes, that's quite the... That's quite the move.
Jane, I'm old enough to remember when the rand went from 1360 to 575.
Yeah.
Back at the turn of the millennia.
I don't think I've ever seen the rand at 5 rand. I don't think I was alive when the rand was at 5 rand. That's crazy. Yeah. So 1680, we're going to break the 16 rand barrier. Yeah. Is this contingent on the government of national unity or whatever we're calling it staying together?
I mean, short on C. Look, if that thing collapses, then all bets are off. But it's contingent on that. It's contingent on rate cuts coming. It's contingent on the power staying on. I mean, all of those bits and pieces. And here's the fun fact. I mean, all of these all-time highs and lovely, loving our market, the resources sector is off a third from the highs of 2022. I mean, we're doing it without resources. Okay, gold's there. But imagine if, like, the PGMs
start kicking
and coal and iron ore start kicking. I mean, that needs China, and I don't see that happening. But, like, you know, let's say over the next 5 years, you know, could China start picking up a bit and start consuming some commodities? Stuff could get crazy.
You say China's not going to come to the party, and we forget this, that China's still, from an emerging market perspective, even though they're going to be underperforming analyst expectations, are still going to be punching north of 4%.
Yeah.
Because for them, underperforming is anything less than 5%. We're struggling to get to 1%. So even at underperformance of China, there's still a tailwind. I mean, the moment we start to see China really come into themselves and sort out their housing market and all of that and really start to come back, it's going to be a very, very steep kind of demand cycle. Things are just going to escalate very quickly. And on the South African side, in the resources sector, our resource guys know that this will come. It might not come now. It might not come in 6 months. It might not come in 12 or even in 24 months. But they're sitting there saying, we're going to keep up with production.
Yeah.
We're going to stockpile so that when the demand comes out, we're just going to make more at a higher price off of stuff we've already mined.
Yeah. And if you look at the Implats numbers that came through, production is up 13%, sales up 16%, costs well contained. Their problem was price down 30.
That's it. External things they could do absolutely nothing about. It was the price factor. That's crazy. So we're bullish on SA markets. We're happy about the way some markets have kind of settled through into August. August was overall a fairly decent month, and we kind of have interest rates to look forward to in September. But what we didn't touch on in the August performance was the gold price making new all-time highs more than once. Yes, more than once.
So many times. If you think about it, the gold market is up since the beginning of the year by 24%, 22%, or 20 plus, let's say. The gold market hit new highs at least 22 times, 23 times. I mean, one way to look at it, right, is like, I mean, of course, everyone knows that, the gold is one of these safe havens, right? And it's even more true now, actually, I think, because if you look at, for instance, the holdings of most of these central banks, generally speaking, you would see that the biggest currency that they are holding is, of course, the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
But the second one is actually gold. And three is actually euro.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, to me, it shows that actually most of the central banks don't really believe or trust the dollar anymore, or they're starting to be uneasy about the dollar.
Raising questions.
It's the conversation that we had that Sai brought up last week when we had this chat about weaponization of the dollar. Yeah. Danny, on your point around the gold price seemingly making highs, it's making highs as we speak. Yeah. So it's sitting around $2,526. Sure. Highest is $2,531. We could realistically make a new high by the end of business today. And that's
if you hold your breath, it could make a high before you breathe
that's
again.
That's it, right? This is just, it's one-way traffic. I mean, I look at a chart from March, right? Okay. From February, we were around, the highest we got was around $2,065 an ounce. We've done a full $500 on that. We've done a full 25%, as you said, 20%+ since the start of the year. So we've done full and it's one-way traffic. It's the kind of chart Simon likes. Everybody knows what that
is. I love that chart. Yeah, I'm a simple look. Bottom left, top right.
That's it. Not the other way around.
No.
But that's all we have time for. Thanks, Danny. Thanks as always for joining us. Thank you to Finalto for continuing to believe in the work that we do. We'll leave it at that. That's Market Matters this week.